This is FM 100.5 and 101.9, AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County, and it is a beautiful day. We have Nelson Smotherman on today, and that's going to be a great show. And we want to let you know that the first part of the show is brought to you by Pirtle and Howerton Automotive. That's Mark Pirtle and John Howerton. And their business is at 2006 North Main Street in Shebaville, Tennessee. And if you're looking for a Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC, and a great deal, give them a call at 1-800-264-6800, toll-free, or pull them up on the internet, PirtleHowerton.com, and let's take about a 25-minute drive, or make it 30, just enjoy your day. And it's on the left before you get into downtown Shebaville. Go in and see the nice people. And this is one of those days that's just like pure heaven in Rutherford County. And anytime I'm with Nelson Smotherman, it's a lot of fun. He is our Rutherford County sports historian, and he is the official TSSAA historian. And Nelson, it's always good to have you here, and we've got a lot going on in basketball right now.
We sure have. Region tournaments are just about over. Tonight will be the boys' semifinal games. And then Thursday night, the girls' finals. And I believe I'm right, Brian, Friday will be the boys.
Wednesday night, girls. Thursday, boys. And Saturday, girls' sectional. Next Monday, boys' sectional. So Friday, no high school this Friday, but every other day, it seems.
Well, you know, that makes it all worthwhile. There's nothing more exciting than high school sports. And then especially when it comes to basketball, which has been king around here outside of baseball all of these years. And you know just about every game. In fact, it's not just about every game. You know every game that's ever been played in the history of state sports in high school.
I have the girls and boys state tournaments. I have the boys' brackets from 1921 to date. Mm-hmm. I have the girls' brackets 1922 when it started through 1929 when it quit. Mm-hmm. Then it comes back in 1958, and I have all that to date. And I also, Truman, have all the stat sheets since they've been passing them out for the state tournaments.
You are sitting in a world that most men would kill for, and I'm not talking about literally, of course, but I can't imagine being able to be at your house and go through and reliving all these memories and the changes of sports that has happened. It's not just the girls, and you and I will probably talk a little bit how the girls have changed, but the boys have changed too, because I can remember watching them play when I was just a kid, and the game is so much more fast-paced now than it ever was.
Oh, it really is, and of course, back in the early days of basketball, you couldn't dribble, you had to pass it. Then they got away to let you have one dribble before you passed. The first baskets were peach baskets nailed on the wall.
Do you remember those?
No, I don't remember those. That was when Naismith invented the game. Uh-huh. But I do know in that ball game, he had one ball game between his phys ed team and the faculty. And the faculty only scored 2 points in that game. You know who scored that 2 points?
No.
One of the greatest football coaches of all times, Amos Alonzo Stagg.
Oh, my goodness, how he is. I mean, he is the one that everybody idolized and had just about every record until the last few years. But, you know, we were talking about the changes in girls' basketball, and it's not just been, you know, one change or two changes. It's been bouncing back and forth, and I wonder why they did that, because you were showing me a rule that governed girls' basketball, and in 1922, they had 5-on-5.
They actually had three sets of rules from 22 up until And I can tell you exactly when, 1940. Mm-hmm. They went to the 6-on-6 three court, like most everybody's listening to us, mm-hmm. and us can remember. Mm-hmm. They was played 5-on-5. Then they played, like I said, the 6-on-6 that we knew. Mm-hmm. Then there is another version of 6-on-6 where the centers, there were two lines painted across the middle of the floor, and the centers worked up in that area. Mm-hmm. Your guards had to get the ball to their center, and she had to get it to the forwards. And so consequently, when you got into the state tournament, no centers got a hold of the ball. They didn't have the first idea of what to do with it in that 5-on-5. That's why you had games, and I just wrote a few of these down to show you. 1924, Hume Fogg, 77, Waverly 2.
Good 20, night.
25, Hume Fogg, 69, Brummett nothing. Union, and also in 24, I think it was, Union City, 70, Savannah 3.
It didn't sound like it would be any of those games would be worth watching.
No, it doesn't. And see, back in those days, too, in the 6-on-6, and I guess even on the 5-on-5, I'm not sure about this, but I know that they jumped on 6-on-6, they jumped the ball after every basket, and I think they did in 5-on-5, too.
Now, didn't they did that in the men's and girls, didn't they?
Right.
Back then?
They did back then, yes. That's why the girls' coaches love to find that girl, like the woman we were talking about the other day at the City Cafe, the great Aline Banks, because she was about 6 foot or 6'1" back in the 30s.
And athletic.
And very, very athletic. Everybody asked me once, somebody will say, who was the best player ever come out of here? They expected me to answer that. It's Catherine Washington.
Yes, I would have thought so. But I remember them talking about Aline Banks.
Aline Banks, after she graduated, just to show you how good she was, she was right-handed. She got her right arm injured. She had them strap it to her side where she couldn't use it. Two nights later, her road team is playing in New York. She plays in that game the first time in her life left-handed, scores 56 points.
That seems almost unreal. How could anybody be that good? But sometimes it seems like there is just that perfect scenario. This Catherine Washington, to me, was one of those. I mean, she was one of those people that was unreal. I wish I had seen Aline Banks play. I really do.
I didn't get to see her play either, Truman. But I want to tell you, talking about Catherine, I want to be completely fair to Catherine. I have said this time and again, and I'll still stick to it. You cannot judge one player or compare them from, say, the 30s. She was playing in the 50s, late 40s, early 50s.
Right.
You cannot compare those girls because of different sets of rules. And even today, you take somebody, Magic Johnson, how could you compare him to somebody, say, back in the 50s or 40s? You can't do it.
Yeah, because the rules have changed, and the way that people look at it, even the officials, has changed. Back, you and I remember a time back when basketball was one of those sports that was almost a non-contact sport. Because if you touch somebody in any way, just about, they would call a foul on you. And now you have to get mugged almost. You have to be hogtied before they'll ever call a foul on you. And you're talking about changing things, just like Jimmy Montgomery, and we've talked about this before. There was no three-point shot back when he played. And as we all remember, when he did play, it seemed like everything that he hit was a three-point shot, and he still owns the record for most points scored in a game. Or in a season.
In a season.
Yeah, a season.
Well, and in career, too.
I mean,
4,013 in his career.
And you sit back, and he actually was a team player. Now, I've heard people say, well, he must have been shooting a lot. He did shoot a lot, but, I mean, he made his shots. And if there was a teammate open, he was going to throw it. And I did want to mention somebody's name while we're sitting here talking about we're talking about sports. I want to mention Ben Cates' name. Ben Cates played on that real good Kittrell team, as we know, and Ben had an accident a few days ago, and had one of those where you work on a farm and a horse problem, as we all know, and we want to wish Ben a lot of good luck and a quick healing process, because I know how that is. All right, now we're in here today, and we're talking about some of the teams that are playing today. And let's say a team like Riverdale. Riverdale, the girls, are just absolutely one of the best teams that you've probably ever seen. I mean, they're just absolutely wiping out everybody this year. How do you think somebody like Catherine or Aileen, if they were to come in here on a team like that, what would it do to that team?
Oh, good gosh. I wouldn't even want to think about it.
But it's amazing how athletic the girls are. But you go back, they were kind of stymied back then by the rules, weren't they?
Yes, they were, quite a bit. You bring girls like that, you get girls like that come in today, mm-hmm. and say play against them, I'll be honest with you, I don't believe they could stop them. I don't believe Riverdale could stop them.
I'm not sure anybody could. In fact, I would probably guess that if those players were playing today and they'd been in high school, every university in the nation would be after them.
Oh, they would. And Nera White, for example, she's as good as either one of those three. And she holds, and most people don't know this, she holds a record with one of the greatest dribblers that ever lived, Marcus Haynes.
Oh, yeah, with Goose Tatum.
In Mexico City, he dribbled the ball out for an entire quarter. She did the same thing in a district tournament game.
Well, those skills come around not very often. I mean, we could talk about almost in any athletic sport at all, there's always someone or something that stands. But we can go back in 73 with Secretariat that ran an impossible race. I mean, it was absolutely impossible, by winning by 31 lengths in New York at the end of the Triple Crown. And then you get into these superior athletes that we've had right here. There's no way that you can put any kind of rational formulation for those people, just like Jimmy Montgomery. And I remember when Mr. Pate was talking about Tommy Trott, he said, I saw something wrong with his way he was delivering his jump shots. Put him on the side, let him shoot 10, didn't hit anything but the bottom of the net. And he says, you cannot mess with that. There's just something about just natural-born talent.
That's right. If you got natural-born talent like that, the coach is very smart just to stay away from it and let you do your thing.
Now, how can you relate the changes that you've seen over the years in the state basketball tournaments? I mean, do you still have the same atmosphere, the same drive, the same tenacity that's been there all of these years? And it seems like a lot of times the coaches are a little bit more animated now than I remember when we were watching games.
Oh, they are. And you go back, like you said, back to the time of Lee Pate, Buck Van Hoos, Jim Smitty. Mm-hmm. You never saw coaches get up off the bench and holler instructions to players like they do today. That's one of the things you see. Officiating has changed. It went from one, then you went into, I think it was 1950-51, mm-hmm. that they went into two, and then what was it, somewhere along, I've got the exact dates at home, mm-hmm. somewhere around 89 and 90, somewhere in there, they went to three officials in the game.
I don't see how one could call. But they weren't as active as they are right now. I mean, they're moving all the time.
Oh, when you had one calling, and I can talk just a little bit from experience there, because when I played grammar school ball, mm-hmm. I called one or two or so of our scrimmages and had to call it by myself. And I tell you, you got to move up and down the floor. You got to be in the right place at the right time.
Do you think the atmosphere at the games, is it like it used to be, say, in the 50s and the 60s, when we still had the Kittrells and Christiana and Rockvale and Walter Hill and Smyrna and Murfreesboro Central and all of that, it seemed like when you would go in to the gymnasium, it would be so loud you couldn't hear. Do we still have that, or is that more of a community pride thing than what we've got now?
Well, it is. Also, today, you don't have the crowds. In other words, what I'm saying is, like, all right, you bring these black teams in from Memphis, mm-hmm. Knoxville, Chattanooga, even some from Nashville. Mm-hmm. They don't have the following that we had back in those days.
Hmm.
And so it's not quite as loud in the gym.
Well, it seemed like the larger you get, the less close the fans are to the teams. And I really don't understand that, but I do know that when they split up the schools in the early 70s, that a lot of that atmosphere seemed to evaporate for whatever reason. Of course, I mean, you have years and years of history with each school, and everybody seemed to be part of that. The communities were part of it.
That's true. And like you say, when you break up this, build a new school and mm-hmm. start there, okay, it takes a while to build up a school of following for any team. Mm-hmm. It's not like we just had just Murfreesboro Central and you fill the gym every night.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to happen anymore.
But, you know, people seem to follow when the team seems to be reaching a higher level. Just like, let's go to MTSU girls basketball. Rick has brought, Ensel has brought in a program that MTSU and Murfreesboro and people in Rutherford County seems to be buying on to. I mean, it's a lot of fun. I love to watch him coach. And it seems like that when you're there, it's like it was 35 or 40 years ago when I used to go to the games that I really enjoyed. It seems like he's bringing that flavor right back here. And I think you're going to see a time when that gymnasium is being filled just like it is at UT and some of the teams that have really brought nationwide attention to this area.
Oh, I think he will too, because Rick really gets a lot out of those girls. He gets good players in there. You know, I want to be fair to one of his girls. When I heard that he was going to sign Shanice Kaysen,
mm-hmm.
I had my doubts watching her play high school ball, mm-hmm. that she could play college ball. I have been very pleasantly surprised that young lady. She is flat playing the game.
Oh, yeah, she is.
She has brought a lot to that program, when we really needed it, too, when you consider that Tina would have been the point guard this year.
Well, what were you? Was it the size that was giving you some problems? Because she's not real tall.
No, the size not necessarily, but she just didn't play. I guess you say she didn't play quite as controlled a game as she's playing now. Mm-hmm. In high school, it seemed to me every time she got that ball, the only thing she wanted to do was head straight to the goal with it. And now she's looking around, passing it off. She's getting her points when she can. She may not get 5-6 points a ball game. Mm-hmm. But the other thing she does, steal the ball, set people up for buckets. She is just really coming there and really playing some good ball.
I tell you, one that I've been impressed with is Jones. She is a pure shooter.
Oh, she is.
She has the best touch of anybody I've seen around here in a long time.
She may have the best touch of any woman I've seen since maybe Nera White's time in Catherine.
You know, the time that I remember a girls basketball changing the most for me, and of course we're in different eras, so you can't compare, but I remember when Sheila Frost was playing for Giles County, and she came in here, and I could see there were a number of college coaches, that were there scouting her, just her. And she was about 6'5", I think. And
somewhere like that.
And could move and could shoot. And, of course, she ended up on the very first Tennessee National Championship team, I believe, and came from just outside here. And, you know, this has always been a place to grow those type of athletes. I mean, Middle Tennessee area And I think back, and if you could put all of those players together that you've mentioned that we've seen over the years, they would be completely unstoppable. And I just wonder what it is in this area that it, would it be the fundamentals, the basics, or just plain natural talent?
I think maybe coaching the fundamentals would have a lot to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's two other girls that, you know, came from the Middle Tennessee area, one from right here in Murfreesboro Central, Sis Jones.
And who is one of my cousins.
She is. And Betty Carroll Fighting. I don't know if you remember her.
Yes.
Or not. She was from Liberty.
Uh-huh.
Well, they both wound up over at MTSU together and were playing just intramural ball, but they still travel around and play some teams.
Mm-hmm.
And Nera White and NBC came in and played them one night. Those two girls, between them, scored 60 points, and they beat NBC.
Mm. Mm. That was a big upset.
I would think it was.
Now, how do you feel about being the caretaker of everything that goes on in high school sports? I mean, we're not talking about just basketball or football. We're talking about everything down to soccer and volleyball and everything else. How do you feel about having that responsibility, and you're the one that everybody goes to find out if something's right or wrong in sports?
I enjoy it. And the way I got into it was when in 1989, the TSSAA hired me to do the record book, which mm-hmm. they've never upgraded. And that's when I already had these two books that I have here with me today on the girls and boys basketball.
Mm-hmm.
But in going back and doing that record book, I put together the baseball, softball, soccer, volleyball, all those state tournament books. I've got all the brackets, all the scores.
So if anybody has a question or they have an argument going on who's right or wrong about something that happened in sports years ago, you're the one that has to be the final word. And that's a big responsibility, because those are records that you don't want destroyed. And you were telling me earlier that you have copies. You have a secondary copy on everything.
I do. I have. We keep a set of books at the TSSAA office.
Mm-hmm.
I also have a set of books at home. So that way, if something happened, we still got a copy of the records.
So if somebody wanted to research something, say if they want to go back and research the history of basketball in Rockvale or Kittrell or any community in the state of Tennessee, would it have to be during the tournament time, or would this be the total package?
Well, I don't have the, of course, regular season from all the schools. I do from Murfreesboro Central all the way back to 1919.
Mm-hmm.
Or 1920, rather. We didn't play in 1919 because of the
the war.
Flu epidemic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, was it the flu epidemic?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was a war. Okay.
Yeah. Well, 1919-20, we
amazing.
did have the team. You see, Central High opened in 1918 as a four-year school, and it was in 15, 16, and 17, it was either a two or a three. I've never been exactly sure which it was. I said two, and Baxter Hopgood said three, and I've seen it said both ways.
I wouldn't want to argue with either one of you, either you or Mr. Hopgood, either one. But you seem to have an ability to pull up facts and stats. How much of that do you have stored up in that head of yours?
As far as if I have to look up something in state tournament, for somebody, I would have to go to the, as I told you, I have all the stat sheets from girls and boys from time they've been given doing the stat sheets. One good example of that is Ron Bogotsky called me, getting ready to do the games on TV, and he's putting some trivia together.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, how many points does Sally Smith have in, I believe he said, in the state tournament that you're in a certain game or whatever? And I said, hold on just a minute, Ron, let me go get the stat sheets mm-hmm. for that year. He couldn't believe I had all those stat sheets.
Did you see the 1960 Murfreesboro Central team?
I worked at state tournament.
Have you ever seen a better team than that? And a team to lose?
they just kind of, actually, Robert Nunnery,
the center,
was having problems. And I think you knew how Lee Pate was.
Yes.
He just left him out there, thinking he'd get him straightened out, and he never did. But Jerry White, if you remember, came off the bench for Hampton and scored like 20 points.
They ran the deck.
What was unusual about that state tournament? It has never been done since then.
Well, one thing I remember, now it's probably not the right answer, but I saw the game. They were using oxygen on their bench. They were running players in and out, and absolutely wore Murfreesboro Central out.
That's absolutely correct. And the next year, it was declared ineligible by the TSSAA.
But it didn't help. It didn't help the 1960 Tigers, did it?
No, it sure didn't. And something else happened that year with Hampton. Their manager messed up big time. He put the clothes in the uniforms in the cleaners, and he forgot to go get them. They won that state championship game wearing Vanderbilt jerseys.
Now, did anybody ever recognize that?
Yeah, it was picked up.
I don't even remember that, and I saw the game. We're going to take a quick break and let you know that this portion of the show is brought to you by At Home Care. And that's Melissa Warren's business, and it's located at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, and that's right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. And they come into your home 24/7, and they take care of everything inside. They make sure that you don't have anything to do except sit back and enjoy life and remain in your home. And if that sounds good to you, give them a call at 713-4639 or pull them up on the internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com.
If you love college basketball, there's nothing like the madness of March. If you're a fan of the Sun Belt Conference, the place to be March 3rd through the 6th is Hot Springs, Arkansas. For the 2012 Conference Basketball Tournament, ticket packages for the entire tournament are available for $128 at your local Sun Belt Schools ticket office. Don't miss out on 4 days of fun in Hot Springs, Arkansas, America's first resort. The Sun Belt's top teams will battle it out for a trip to the dance. With new rivalries being made, championships being crowned, and dreams coming true. Get your Sun Belt Conference Tournament tickets today.
Hello, my name is Lance Jenkins, candidate for property assessor. As your next property assessor, I will ensure that every property owner is treated fair and equally. I have over 17 years experience in the property assessor's office, serving from 1987 to 2004 as deputy assessor under former assessor Tommy Sanford. I would appreciate your vote for property assessor. I am Lance Jenkins, and I approve this message, Lynn E. Jenkins, treasurer. Vote Lance Jenkins, property assessor.
Did you realize we have 10 items at the Maple Street Grill for lunch under $6.99? Hi, this is Mike from Maple Street Grill. Debbie and I wanted to invite you down to try some of the exciting new menu items. 10 items at the Maple Street Grill for lunch under $6.99. Maple Street Grill, 109 North Maple Street in the historic downtown Murfreesboro area.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by the Omni Hut Restaurant in Smyrna, AmeriCare Pest Control, and the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS.
I've got pets.
AmeriCare is Rutherford County's number one choice in pest control, and it's simple to see why. After calling 893-7111, their staff came to my house 8 years ago when I had an insect problem. They looked at the situation, showed me the areas, and what they'd recommend to resolve the problem. After treatment and with quarterly checks, I'm bug, critter, and creepy crawly free. Thanks, AmeriCare.
Call the best of the best to get rid of your pest.
AmeriCare, 893-7111.
Big weekend ahead, Good Neighbor Events from WGNS. Lawn Care 101 is this Friday night and Saturday morning over at the Lane Agri Park. Learn how to manage and take care of your lawn. Everything you need to know. Now, there is a $10 fee to include the lunch on Saturday as well as all the materials. So call the Lane Agri Park at 898-7710 for information. 6 o'clock Friday night and starting again 8:30 Saturday morning. And the 7th annual SRO Lone Star Rodeo is Friday and Saturday evening at 7:30 at the Tennessee Miller Coliseum. It benefits the School Resource Officers Program that helps 36,000 school students in this county. The SROs also take about 800 special needs children to the rodeo on Friday. To get tickets or for more information, call 904-3070. Well, coming up Saturday, Second Chance Outreach Ministries is holding a family day at noon this Saturday. Reverend Carl Marable begins another crusade to fight crime and violence in our community and bring families together. That'll be from noon until 3 right there on State Street this Saturday. Those are Good Neighbor events.
Weatherize. See a chance for showers here for this afternoon with partial sunshine and a high near 38 degrees. Tonight, showers and possibly a thunderstorm with cloudy skies, and we'll see a low near 59. I'm WGNS meteorologist Jennifer Vujitsky.
Right now, 70.
Did you get a sad face after your emissions test?
Come by Todd's Complete Auto Care and we'll get your car to pass and put a smile on your face.
This is Amy at Todd's Complete Auto Care Center. We'll even take it through emissions for you.
Todd's Complete Auto Care on Southeast Broad across from the Discovery Center.
Come see me.
The Truman Show now continues on the voice of Rutherford County, WGNS AM and FM.
And welcome back with Nelson Smotherman. And we want to let you know that this portion of the show is brought to you by the Golden Coin Connection, located at 2568 South Church Street, and that's beside the Gateway Tire Center in the Strip Mall. And they also have another location at 5631 New Nashville Highway. And Pastor Larry Dunn of ERO Ministries and partners Chris Chico and Wayne Eberly, they buy scrap gold, jewelry, platinum, coins, and silverware. They have vintage sports collectibles and even some great antiques. And for a fair and honest evaluation of your collectibles, take them by and see Pastor Larry Dunn and his partners today, and that's at the Golden Coin Connection, 2568 South Church Street, or 5631 New Nashville Highway, and you can give them a call at 890-2646. And you have the history of the beginning of the state tournaments, and when did that actually start, and did they both start together?
No, they were a year apart. In 1921, Vanderbilt and the Tennesseans started the boys' state.
Mm-hmm.
Then in 1922, the girls' state was established with the Tennessean and Peabody College.
Uh-huh.
Then in 1925, the TWSAA was established and took over, but they recognized those first years of the state tournament as TWSAA records, state champions. In 1928, they started playing the consolation brackets in the boys and played it through 1949.
Wow.
In 29, the girls' state tournament stopped. The use of three sets of rules across the state of Tennessee was the reason for that. 33-36, we didn't have a state tournament, which obviously I think would be because of the Depression.
Right.
That's in the boys.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, 1950s, I said that was 50 was the last consolation bracket for the boys. The girls never had consolation brackets. 1951, they did play a consolation game for third and fourth place. It was established in, let's see if I can, don't see it right now. And the girls' state tournament was reestablished in 1958.
Wow. You know, when did they actually start classifying the schools on size, because I am still not too sure about that. And of course, we've got a lot of great teams that are probably getting to play, but simply because they did classify them, and they have more of a chance, maybe in some respects, of winning tournaments. But you and I remember a time when the small schools dominated basketball. They really did.
Oh, they did.
Not just girls, but boys, too. I remember Linden. Oh, my goodness. You couldn't beat Linden.
You beat Albert Elliston.
Yeah, unbelievable. Why do you think, TWSAA had some specific reason for doing that, or was it maybe to spread out the wealth a little bit more?
I really don't know what brought that on, but to answer your question, in 1973, they started the classification of small and large.
Mm-hmm.
Then in 1976, they went to the A, AA, and AAA.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what I was looking for. Up through 1972, 72 was the last time that we played a third and fourth place thing. And actually back, Truman in the 40s, they played double elimination,
mm-hmm.
so to speak, because you went into the consolation brackets. Murfreesboro Central finished seventh in that one in 1942.
Hmm.
And I have a picture of that team.
But Murfreesboro Central's first state
that was their first
victory was, I mean, the championship was when?
65.
And you were naming the players on that. Pretty darn good bunch of players.
Oh, you better believe it was. Now, Murfreesboro Central's first actual state championship belongs to the 1924 girls and Mr. W.R. Romine, who
oh
was the coach.
Oh, my goodness.
It had a record of 14-4.
And they were the first champions.
And they were the first champions in 1924.
See, you're amazing at the knowledge and how you can remember that stuff. All right. In your mind, and I consider you an expert on high school sports, do you think that when they went to the classifications that it was a positive thing because everybody loves the David and Goliath stories? They love for the small teams. We've all seen the movie Hoosiers, where the little small Indiana team
yeah.
goes up into the big leagues and beats all the big boys. And that's something that really does get my interest. And that's why I think Kittrell was a fascinating team back in the early 60s. And it wasn't just Montgomery. It was the Nippers and the Cates and the Joneses. They were just almost walking on air back then. And everybody was pulling for Kittrell. It didn't matter who. It didn't matter if they were from Kittrell or wherever. And, you know, I think that that's part of the sports that we're missing is the emotional part, where sometimes I'm not too sure if one of those country teams here in Rutherford County, if they were to go to a state championship, them against the big boys, I still believe that they would fill the gymnasium up.
They probably would, and I'll tell you, if we'd had anybody make it, these small schools after the classification,
mm-hmm.
they probably would have gone a long way in that, you know, tournaments then.
Well, you've seen more of that than I have. Would you put those teams up and that were here in the earlier years, the neighborhood schools, if you put those up against the teams that you're seeing now, how successful do you think they would be?
There again, that's hard to say, and I'll mm-hmm. tell you my reason for saying it that way. Integration.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not knocking the white players because we still have great white players. But there's just a whole lot of difference now in the game now and then.
So you're talking about more athletic.
More athletic, yes.
But let's say just pure basketball skills. We're talking about, and of course, part of the movement, the dribbling and all that is athleticism, of course. But there's just something about watching a player leave the floor and then have that rhythm with a jump shot that just seems to be just flawless. And I think it's still a big attraction for the fans of yesteryear, and probably because, you know, we both saw the battles between Magic Johnson and Larry Bird. I mean, it drew national attention. And they had such great skills and unbelievable. One was probably more basketball skills, and the other one had more athleticism, but mixed with the basketball skills too. And, you know, that's something that's rare. It's very rare.
It is very rare.
And I think it's something that, but if you put and we go back to putting the officiating of back then with the officiating with the players of today, it kind of does hamper them a little bit because you're not able to use your body as much back then as you are today. So you don't have the fighting for position and the strength and all those things that seem to be involved in today's game.
Now today, and I see it more in college really than I do in high school, but there still is a lot of battling for position and so forth in college. High school, and I've harped on this with TSSAA, is just not physical enough. I keep telling them, look, mm-hmm. you need to let these girls and boys play exactly like they're going to play in college, so that the ones that are going to be good enough to play college ball know what the heck they can do when they get there.
You think that hampers the college coaches when they come in and assess the talent that they're looking at?
I do for at least maybe a half year or a year, till they get, you know, till they've seen enough competition to know how much looser it is that you can play up there, because you can play quite a bit more loose basketball in college.
You know, and you're what you're saying, and I agree with wholeheartedly. And of course, a lot of it when you're going to another level, say if you're in high school and you're thinking about going to college and even beyond that, a lot of it is your coaching, the fundamentals that you learn. Because we go back to Rick, look how many All-Americans that he produced when he was at Shebaville. And of course, you had Harry Gill and Mr. Harris and all those other great coaches around here that we all remember that were able to formulate and see the great talent and then even make it better. And right here, I mean, if you're thinking about going somewhere beyond the high school level, you couldn't have a better ground to work with than Rutherford County in this, or in the Middle Tennessee area, especially.
No, really, you couldn't. And you get a program going like Rick had his. Mm-hmm. Let's just take Abby Ramsey, for example. She played up on the mountain, mm-hmm. Meigs County, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. And she told her parents one day, says, you know, says, we move down to Shebaville, I get a lot better recognition in paper for my abilities than I can up here. They moved down, bought a farm, Shelville, and she went on and played for Rick. Well, the last 2 years, I believe, were high school ball. Mm-hmm. Went to Vanderbilt, made a great player down there. And it's just, a coach gets a program up, people want to move in and play for them.
Yeah, and they don't mind moving, picking up and going to somewhere else to make sure that that's possible. And that's quite an attribute to have as far as a coach is concerned, to know that you're drawing that kind of respect in here. And I can tell you, going to these games now is a whole lot different world at MTSU than it used to be. Well, of course, in some respects, of course, we remember when Jimmy was coaching here, and MTSU used to fill the place up. It was unbelievable. And Jimmy Earle is one of the best college coaches I've ever seen.
He really was a top-notch coach. And, you know, the funny side of it, if you remember I can't call his name right now, the referee out of Lexington, Kentucky, how many times he stuck him with technical fouls. Jimmy getting on him about his calls. Mm-hmm. I don't think he knew how much Jimmy knew about basketball. You know what he wound up doing, don't you?
Yeah.
He hit the ACC officials and another conference, too, after he retired over here.
And he has the right perspective of officiating. He really does. And they set out the rules for them. And then I can't imagine the pressure of calling a game with Jimmy Earle sitting there watching me, grading me. Because I guarantee you, if you don't get a high level, you're going to be hearing from somebody.
That's for sure. And I had the opportunity one time to set a couple of games with Ralph Stout, who was one of the great NCAA and TSSAA supervisors. Mm-hmm. And I saw how he does it. He would take a pad. He's in his 90, he's 90 or 91 now. Mm-hmm. And, of course, not doing, he's just officiating, taking care of his high school officials still. But he would take a pad and put three lines on it, put the three officials' names up there. He'd make a call. He wrote the time down in his mind, whether it was correct, whether it was incorrect. Mm-hmm. And if it was incorrect, what it should have been. Then he'd go back and get the game film before he ever talked to referees. Mm. See that he was right. Or if he was wrong, he'd mark it off. Then he would go get with his referees. And Truman, if anybody don't think that man is tough, I'll give you one example. There were twins, Smith twins, in the OVC, mm-hmm. referees. Mm-hmm. One of them talked entirely too much. Ref cut him loose. Mm-hmm. Well, not too long after that, his brother was calling a game somewhere, Ref says, "Have you got your list of? Have you got your list of referees?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, your list of assignments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had to have that with you to show where you were going on down the road." He pulled it out, written on a sheet of toilet paper, and he fired him on the spot.
You know, one thing we know is, if you're an official, you have a long-term memory, don't you? I mean, any time that you have any type of run-in with a coach, you're going to remember that. It may be not the next game or the game after that, but somewhere along the line, there's going to be a meeting of the mind somewhere.
There is. That's for sure.
And that's something. One thing I love to watch is I love to watch the coaches try to manipulate the referees. And then I love to watch the referees, how they respond to it. And I guarantee you, the best coaches know how to get the most out of each referee. But there are going to be some referees that are going to react just the opposite. And we remember Burl Crowell and all those great referees that used to be around here. And the referees' names were just as clear to you as the coaches and the players at one time. I don't seem to know the referees. Maybe I don't watch them as much as I used to. But they don't seem to command the attention that they did at one time.
No, I don't know near as many of them as I used to. I used to know every one of them that came in here. But you mentioned Burl Crowell.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you have any idea where you went to high school.
Actually, I don't. I was thinking it was somewhere just east of here. Tell me.
Very close east of here. Buchanan High School.
Okay.
Out the road here.
Yep. I ran
That's
into...
That's where he started his officiating, by the way, Truman. He called all his...
Oh, really?
All his practice games for him.
I ran into his sister a few months ago, and she was listening to us talk about him, which tickled me to death. And that's one of the good things about having people like you that are historians is that there's no story that you can't dig up somewhere and bring back the memory of all those. And the referees, the officials, have meant just as much to the game as everybody else that has played and coached. They really do.
They really do now. You know, Mr. Pate was quite a stickler for how you look going to the ball game.
Oh, yes, yes.
I think one of the funny stories, and we were talking about the 65, I believe it was 65 team that had
Charlie Jordan.
Well, what was it, Bill Weldon on it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He made Bill Weldon get a haircut three times before we let him play basketball. He came back over here from Spain and had one of them pumped on the front, tails in the rear and all it. John Swofford had came to the barbershop three times, and John's one told this,
mm-hmm.
before he let him come out and play.
Well, I'm not surprised.
6'8", that height didn't make any difference to him. You were going to look nice, and you know, because you played for him, I think, didn't you?
Yes, I did. And the thing about him is everything had to be perfect, not just the way you played, but your dress, your appearance, everything had to be to suit him. I can remember when we were, and this was just a football team, that we were out practicing basketball with the other players, and if we had a shirt that would come out, it wouldn't be tucked in, you had to listen to him for a while. It was just those things. I mean, he was aimed at perfection the whole time that he was coaching, and not just on the court or on the field. It was.
No, that's for sure, and I wonder just how many people here Murfreesboro might know that Lee actually got fired from his first coaching job.
He'd been the one that fired him.
He was, well, it was kind of funny. He was the freshman coach at Baylor in Chattanooga.
Mm-hmm.
Had his own practice field, coaching the freshman team.
Mm-hmm.
The Baylor varsity coach tells him one day, bring the boys up, scrimmage me. Lee comes with him and takes his guys up and comes in 6 points of beating the Baylor varsity with his freshman.
Mm-hmm.
And the varsity coach cut him loose, said there'd be no days like that. He thought Lee was trying to take his job away from him. Within a week.
I can understand that.
Or a week and a half, Mr. Pate said that that Bradley Central came down and hired him. And he coached up there for 5 or 6 years, I think, before he full 5 years before he was Mr. Hopgood hired him to come to Murfreesboro.
Well, you think about how important is a coach. And we know with Mr. Pate was able to get an impossible 115-120% out of his players, and they were all coached on the fundamentals. Any time that you would mess up with an assignment, you would be called to task with it. And it got to be such a point of interest to you that was all that was in your mind was focused. If you were supposed to block an end inside, that's all you were focused on. You were not going to let him get outside you no matter what you had to do, because you were knowing in your own mind that everything you're doing has been watched by him. And the last year that we played, we went undefeated. We were not that good physically. We were not. But as far as the mechanics, we were pretty darn good. And you saw that. You've seen that in a lot of teams. And if you see how great a team is without that real great talent, you've got a superior coach. And the successful ones over the years have always been those ones that are focused in on all the fundamentals and make sure that everybody buys into it.
And they're the ones, like you say, that have been so very successful. And as we talked, I forget who I was talking to, it might have been you, talking about the fact that coaches today don't like to share players like they did back years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't. Now, when you played for Coach Pate, he coached both boys basketball and football.
Mm-hmm.
When basketball season kicked in for practice, football was still going on. If you played both sports, when you got through practicing football, you went inside, changed into your basketball clothes, and practiced another couple of hours in there for that sport.
And you better not have another sport to go to either, because I caught it on that one.
You did?
Yes, sir. And we want to let you know that this portion of the show is brought to you by Stan McNabb Automotive, where they provide quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shelbyville, Tennessee area. Their large selection ensures that they have a vehicle for everyone, no matter what it is you're looking for. And for a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street. They have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. At Stan McNabb Automotive, they pride themselves in the quality that they offer on all of their used cars, which makes them a major destination for used vehicles. And only at Stan McNabb's can you get free oil changes and free tires for the life of that vehicle.
Who is Greg Brooks? Greg Brooks is a husband, a father, a cattle rancher, and a second-generation road builder. He's the most qualified candidate for road superintendent. For over 30 years, he's done everything from shoveling asphalt to building roads, managing multiple crews, while meeting budgets. Please join me, Rita Woodard, and vote for Greg Brooks in the Republican primary March the 6th. Early voting February 15th through the 28th.
I'm Greg Brooks, and I approve this message.
Be a hero for kids with cancer. Join Bald in the Borough's second annual St. Baldrick's event on March 16th at 4 p.m. located in Lanes, Trains, and Automobiles in Murfreesboro. You can be a part of the excitement, whether you shave your head, volunteer, or donate. You'll be giving hope to those kids fighting childhood cancers. Go to baldintheborough.com and see how you can be a hero too. Sponsored by Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
The local conversation continues now on The Truman Show. Once again, here's Truman Jones.
All right, welcome back with Nelson Smotherman and Brian Barrett right now. And we have an argument going on inside the studio.
It's not an argument.
Oh, yes, it is. And Brian was trying to catch you on a question.
I was trying to catch you.
And now you got him on a question. No, you weren't after me.
I was after you. I knew
he
Nelson
was
knew.
Direct, he was looking at you, wasn't he, Nelson?
No.
Yeah, okay. We have a consensus there. All right, Nelson, what's the question?
The question was, what girls' team won the last 6-on-6 state championship and the first 5-on-5 state championship.
Wow. Okay. Brian, that's aimed at you.
Well, what we were discussing was the Rutherford County team that was in the last 6-on-6. It was Riverdale, and they got beat by Warren County.
Mm-hmm. Now, answer his question.
I have no clue. He's the historian here.
See, he should have known that. Go ahead and tell us.
The team that did that mm-hmm. was Pickett County.
Oh,
in 1977,
goodness.
They come to the state tournament, start 5-6 freshmen, and won the state championship. They won the next three.
Wow.
The third one they won was the last 6-on-6. The one in 1980 was the first 5-on-5.
Oh, okay. Now, were they at three classifications at that point?
No.
Just two?
Just two.
Just two. Okay.
Now, do we have a game tonight?
Well, no, they weren't even at one classification.
Is that right? Just one
yeah.
at that point? Yes, we do have games tonight. Region semifinal boys. Laverne will play Tullahoma. The winner of that game will play in the region finals and be in a sub-state come Monday. And they will face the winner of Blackman and Siegel. So we will have a region champion representative in that championship game and a boys sub-state. So final 16 for one, maybe two of our local boys teams, and we'll find out tonight.
Right. Are you calling the games tonight?
John Dinkins and I will head to nearby Bedford County.
Mm-hmm.
So take the new 457 highway, though. It takes about 10 minutes off your drive. You don't have to drive through downtown Shelbyville. No traffic lights.
It's been a while since I've been up through there. But
that's that new highway.
It's a whole lot easier.
Yeah,
to get
that's
up there.
Great. Mm-hmm.
So the game start at when?
Game will start at 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock. Well, I can't wait. Because, you know, even though we don't have the neighborhood teams like we used to, I still really get up for our local team. So let's get out there and support them. We'll see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock.